But will your body clock be affected as a result? Not very likely, with just 1 hour difference. But if I now go to Oxford, it's 9 hours or even more. So I need to adjust by exposing my eyes to the daylight sun. The signal then gets transmitted to the brain and the clock is reset eventually. But here's the big question. What is it in the eyes that responds? And what happens if you're blind? Here's Russell Forster, who does eye research both in Oxford and WA, with stunning results.
We got interested in mice with hereditary retinal disorders some decade ago. And what was extraordinary about these animals with a single gene defect is that they could lose all their rod photoreceptors, their dim light vision, and yet their ability to regulate their circadian system seemed completely unaffected. So we thought, well, it must be the residual cones, the colour vision cells, that were regulating the clock. So we then engineered a mouse by combining the naturally occurring retinal mutation where the rods were gone with a transgenic animal where the cones were gone. And to our intense pleasure and real surprise is that these animals were still able to regulate their circadian physiology using their eyes to the light-dark cycle. So there was something else in the eye that was picking up the dawn-dusk cycle and regulating the body clock.
Well, this is amazing. If you've got the main two collectors, as you said, knocked out, how is the light-sensitive reaction coming to be and how is it connecting to the rest of the body so that the 24-hour cycle is maintained?
Well, that's what's so extraordinary. When we first presented the idea that there could be something else in the eye, I think our retinal colleagues were absolutely mortified. You can appreciate their concern. We've been studying the eye sensibly for 150 years, and there we were saying, actually, guys, we've missed a whole class of receptor. And what this receptor turns out to be is a group of ganglion cells. Now, these are the cells in the eye that send their projections into the brain and form the optic nerve. Now, 1% of these ganglion cells are directly light sensitive and project to the master pacemaker in the brain, the master clock, which is called the suprachiasmatic nuclei.
So that is the main thing that responds when I arrive in Britain off my jet. That's the one that's been scrambled and that has to adjust in about 3 days. By the way, however, is it not the case that these days people are saying that every cell of the body is somehow regulated to the cycle?
That's, again, so fascinating, because we used to think that the SCN was the clock of the body dictating 24-hour rhythmicity to every cell in the body. Our understanding has changed fundamentally, I suppose, in the past 5-6 years, with the discovery that every cell in the body has the capacity to generate a circadian rhythm. So what this clock is rather like is the conductor of an orchestra, producing a regular temporal beat from which all of the component parts of the orchestra, the cells of the body, take their cue and align their physiology accordingly. Now, if you shoot the conductor, destroy the SCN, all the rhythmic components of the orchestra start to drift apart, and so you've got a cacophony rather than a symphony. So I think that's the way that the circadian system is organised.
So much for the mouse. Any people like that?
Oh, yes. We were very fortunate to work with a glorious lady who we have to call SC, which was a fantastic individual, and she was extremely kind and generous with her time. And she was born with a condition whereby all of her rods and cones had degenerated, so she had absolutely no image detection vision whatsoever. And she was picked up by one of my clinical colleagues, and he mentioned this. And so he then said, well, does she have any ability to regulate her body clock to the light-dark cycle? And he said, well, never asked her. We studied this in some detail, and of course she was beautifully aligned. She could regulate her clock to the light-dark cycle perfectly well. So the broad principles that we discovered in a mouse seemed to be absolutely duplicated in a human.
What about blind people in general who can't see at all? How are they affected?
It very much depends upon the nature of the blindness. Now, if you have no eyes, they've been lost in an accident, or, for example, they've been damaged in some other way, as a tumour, for example, then you have no ability to lock your body clock onto the light-dark cycle. And that's an extremely important point, because these receptors that we're talking about are only within the eye, no other structure in the brain. Unlike birds, for example, which have photoreceptors in the pineal, mammals don't. Not even marsupials, and we've looked at that. So it depends very much on the nature of the blindness. If you have no eyes, then you've lost any ability to regulate the body clock with light. If you have a disease whereby the rods or the cones, dim light vision and colour vision, has been affected, chances are you're probably fine. You can regulate your body clock by light. If you have a condition like glaucoma, where the ganglion cells are damaged because of raised pressure within the eye, then, of course, it's the ganglion cells, so it's 1% of light-sensitive ganglion cells that are required to regulate the clock. So then your ability to regulate your body clock would be affected. So very much depends upon the disease. But what's very interesting is that until recently, the advice of ophthalmologists has never really taken this into account. So your ophthalmologist may explain what it would be like to go blind and not be able to see. But let's say in glaucoma, you'll also have the chance of losing your ability to regulate your body clock. And then you not only can't see, but you have unremitting jet lag for the rest of your life. You're drifting through time. And clinical guidelines need to take these sorts of things into account.
And so people who don't have a body clock that's working on a regular basis, you say they've got continuing jet lag, but is there really a major health problem for people like that?
We're beginning to appreciate the impact of disrupting the circadian system and essentially driving physiology outside of its normal range, which a classic example would be shift work. About 20% of the working population are involved in some form of shift work, and increasingly, of course, in Western Australia, with the 24-hour mining, very large group of workers involved in shift work. Now, even after 20 years of working on the night shift, your body clock does not shift to the demands of working at night. You're locked onto the light-dark cycle like everybody else. Now, you can take a night shift worker, increase the amount of light in the factory, hide them from light during the day, and they will actually shift. But most people don't want to hide from light during the day. And so they're essentially driving against internal physiology. And to override the effects of the clock saying, go to sleep, you're going to activate the stress axis. And continual activation of the stress axis has been associated with a whole range of pathologies. It's quite interesting. You know, cardiovascular disease is higher in night shift workers. Cancer is higher in night shift workers. And we think the link there is because, of course, if you're stressed, you've got high cortisol, for example. We know that cortisol will suppress the immune system. And, of course, if you're immune suppressed, you're more vulnerable to diseases, even like cancer. So, yes, there are real consequences of working against internal time.
Now you've found that it's the ganglion part that's sensitive. What next as a result?
One of the big questions that we're addressing at the moment is, well, okay, we know these ganglion cells are light sensitive, and we even know that melanopsin seems to be the pigment, but how does melanopsin actually convert light energy into an electrical response that then travels down the axon of this cell and regulates the body clock? And we've got some cunning ways of teasing apart a signaling pathway, and we had some success last year identifying a new protein which we knew existed in the eye, but nobody had any idea what it was doing. And again, using transgenic technology, you can turn that gene off, look at the impact of its ability to regulate the clock, and we found that when you turn that gene off, the ability to regulate the clock by light is gone completely.
How extraordinary. Now, how are you applying some of these new ideas from Brasenose College in Oxford, where we're sitting, to Western Australia?
Well, I'm absolutely delighted to be a visiting scientist at UWA. And we've been doing a range of different projects. First of all, how do the marsupials detect light and regulate their body clocks? And there's been some great progress there with Julia Shand and Lynn Beasley. And we had a paper published on that last year. But also we're interested in applying the basic understanding of circadian biology to a whole range of areas. We talked about shift work. With all the mining going on in and around Western Australia, we're trying to develop better guidelines for the mining industry and how they should be regulating their shift work scheduling. So, for example, we know that the digestive tract doesn't work very well at night. So what are we going to give our workers in the middle of the night shift? Well, food that is going to be much more easily processed by the gut.
I see. The gut has its own circadian rhythm. Of course, the gut is just about the last thing to catch up after you've landed, maybe 3 or 4 days later.
Yes, and of course, gut disturbance is very common in night shift workers. Classic studies have been done on taxi drivers. I mean, they have a fairly stressful job anyway, and if they're driving at night, you find large numbers of night shift taxi drivers, particularly if they're in middle age, have ulcers.
That's why they're so bad-tempered.
I wouldn't dream of commenting.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.